The following program may contain difficult or triggering subject matter. Listener discretion is advised. CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, Megan Story will be giving us an update on her music work.
So last time you were on, you told me a little bit about your music's impact on the disability community. Could you kind of recap that for me and tell me a little bit about your latest work?
I work really hard to not let my disabilities impact me. They do, but I just more of you can't let things hold you back when you have a passion for something. You just have to keep moving forward and do what you can the best way that you can and make it work. And that's how I do things. So that's how I feel like I impact the disability community, is just, keep working, keep trying, don't give up. Anything is possible.
And this has led to creation of a new song, if I'm not mistaken.
Several, actually. This is just the most recent release that we have. It is called Overwhelmed, and it's more of a, life is hard sometimes, and it's really overwhelming, but it's going to be okay. Just, you can't give up. You have to keep fighting.
That would seem...
is the gist of the song.
So, that would seem to have a huge impact on any listener with a disability, because they hear so often, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. So... as your song is played for them, I'd imagine this would sort of shift the dynamic to just thinking about, maybe exploring what's possible.
Yeah, anything is possible. It's anything is possible. I find that my disability actually opens things up for me and makes it possible for me to do things that I wouldn't have done otherwise. I would be... if I didn't have the problems that I have, I wouldn't be able to do the things that I do. I wouldn't have the time, I feel like it's a give and take. Yeah, I struggle in a lot of areas, but at the same time, I get to follow my dreams. So it's a give and take.
So for those who might have missed our prior interview, would you be comfortable sharing a little bit of your disability story?
Yes. My name is Megan Story, and I grew up in downtown Seattle. I lived in Auburn when I was a kid, and I ended up in foster care when I was 12. And about 3 months later, I was sleeping in doorways and under bridges, and I stayed there until I was 16. And I spent a lot of time in this Denny's, and I filled out probably 1,000 applications at this Denny's to get a job there, and they finally hired me, and I worked there for 8 years, and I was really good at what I did. But while I worked there, I was alone on the floor a lot as the only waitress, and carrying the heavy trays killed the bones in my wrists. And it's called Kienbock disease, and the lunate bone in both of my wrists collapsed and disintegrated. And so I've had 9 surgeries on my hands to correct the damage and stop it from getting worse. Nerves moved, I've had bone taken out, I have fusions, you name it. I've had everything done to my hands. And if it can be released, it's been released. You know, there's a lot of spotty feeling. I don't have a lot of control. Sometimes I tell my fingers to do one thing and they do something else, which is really frustrating for me as a guitar player. But I don't stop. I remind myself that I need to just keep working on, you know, following my dreams and chasing my passion. The Kienbach disease was definitely a blow. And when I went to school after I was diagnosed with it, and I tried to re-educate myself. You know, I was like, okay, well, if I can't be a waitress anymore, what else can I do? And I tried nursing, but that requires a lot of dexterity. I tried forensic technologies and forensic psychology, and that also requires a lot of dexterity. I have a master's degree in family counseling, but I was never able to actually go into that field because of the handwriting part of it. I can't hold a pencil. I can't write. And I have a master's degree in special education, which I was able to do that for a while. But after I had an unfortunate incident with a student, my doctor insisted that I not go back to work after that. And then I was put on disability about a year and a half ago completely. And they said that I will not be going back to work. And that was, it was a blow. I had a really hard time processing that, because I always saw myself going back to work. I never ever thought that I would just be at home. It's been a 20-year battle, but for some reason I just always thought I would go back to work. And so when they told me that day that I wasn't going to be able to, I thought my life was over.
So what techniques have you used to keep your mind focused on the idea of you can still contribute, keep yourself mentally strong for both yourself and the community around you?
I feel like I have an obligation to share a gift that I was given. I've always sang, I've always written songs ever since I was a little kid. My mom says that I could, allergies are terrible this year, that I could sing before I could talk. The first thing that I memorized was the Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack in its entirety, and I was 3 years old. I've always sang, so I feel like I have an obligation and a responsibility to share a gift and to let people know and just stand up and be, you know, who I am, because it's not about giving up. It's about finding another way. There's always another way. You just have to keep looking for the right door. You know, you may be up against a brick wall, but if you try every single brick, there's going to be a loose one. Pull that brick out and start taking that wall down.
So, do you have any advice for anyone out there who might be just starting their journey and wondering, what can I do? How do I find my gift to give to society?
I think all of us are born with an innate gift, and we all know what that is. We all have a passion for something. Whatever your passion is, whatever it is that drives you, do that. Follow that. Chase that. I think if we all spent 15 to 20 minutes a day chasing our dreams, our passions, we would all be a lot happier.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
In this segment of our show, Daniel Van Sant will be telling us about his work with the Harkin Institute. So what can you tell me about your disability policy work with the Harkin Institute?
Sure. So, yeah, I've been with the Institute now just about 4 years, and our policy work in that time, really, I guess the focus is on disability employment, and we do that across a couple different geographies. We have projects that are based in specific states within the United States. We have some federal or nationwide projects, and then some international projects as well. We get to do a lot of work in other countries. Given the global nature of disability employment, it's kind of nice to work across those different areas. And I think thematically, it's everything from working with education institutions to prepare young disabled people for the workforce. It's working with corporations and employers to make sure that they know what accommodations and adjustments are, and how to really help disabled employees integrate, and then working, of course, with, you know, state, national, foreign governments on disability policy issues that create a framework for all disabled people to access competitive integrated employment equally.
So, I'm curious, working both nationally and internationally, do you find there's any commonality between the needs in other countries and what you experience on a more local level when it comes to disabilities employment?
Sure. I think, I would say sort of unfortunately, a somewhat universal experience is stigma related to disability. So I think wherever I am or we are and we're working on this, we see a lot of misconceptions about what a disability is, what disabled people are able to do. There's kind of this pervasive myth that, you know, disabled people as a population are less capable of working in any position or having certain types of jobs, and that to hire someone with a disability is either some sort of charitable undertaking or will result in some kind of expense or loss for the company. And I don't know why that myth has taken hold so strongly, but I would say, unfortunately, that's something that we see almost universally across geographies and other spaces, is this myth, which we work really hard to dispel.
So, that being said, what are some of the techniques you use to dispel the myths?
Something that we try to do, I'll highlight two things. One is highlighting success stories. So finding, you know, really successful people with various types of disabilities in various positions, and highlighting for skeptics, I'll say, how successful that individual is, maybe what those accommodations were, and how easily a company was able to do it, or whatever the employer was. So really showing people the inverse example, right? If we have this sort of idea that disabled people cannot do something, well, let's just show you a person with that disability who is doing that thing, and that usually is a pretty good method of dispelling that myth. And then I think second, it's not only utilizing someone like me to share that message, or even the employee themselves, but really doing it peer-to-peer from company to company. We find that, you know, corporations, the private sector, is very competition-driven. They want to know what their competitors are doing and how they can beat them. And so when you've got a really successful company like Microsoft, for example, hiring people with various disabilities across the enterprise and showing that this is really successful for them, then we engage with managers, with C-suite executives at Microsoft to have them just tell other companies directly. And then it's not, you know, Daniel, the advocate from the Harkin Institute saying this, it's your peer from a very respected corporation. And if they can do it and they're finding success here, then maybe me and my company should look into this and see if we can replicate that as well.
So, when you mentioned success stories, would you be able to share an example of one of the success stories you highlight for those out there who just want to gain a little more understanding?
Yeah, I think of so many different examples. So, on a smaller level, we highlight, you know, entrepreneurs with disabilities who are able to start and run their own businesses. An example of that from, you know, my home state is M's Coffee in Independence, Iowa. M is a woman with an intellectual disability who owns and operates her own coffee shop and employs many individuals with and without disabilities. And so, right, she does a pretty good job of dispelling those myths on their own. And then I look to maybe higher level corporate leaders, like Victor Gleese from Walmart, working in their inclusion space, or Carlos Terrazas from McDonald's, who's again working in that corporate sector with a disability. There are many examples like that, where we can point to both that sort of hardworking entrepreneurial spirit of self-employed people with disabilities, all the way up to these very successful examples of people in, you know, large, you know, corporate settings in Fortune 100, Fortune 50 companies.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks. More information on the Harkin Institute. Follow them on social media. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
And then I noticed this old guy, face like an old shoe, and he walked across the room. And there in the corner, I hadn't seen it before, was this jukebox. And he put in a coin. And he pressed three buttons. And then...
Cowboys and Indies has been bringing you the best in British indie and alternative music for over 30 years on CJAM. Tune in every Saturday night from 9 p.m. until midnight as we bring you the best in British indie and alternative music right here on CJAM 99.1 FM, CJAM.ca, and Kochiko 285. We are redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
You see, the thing that makes sense of this crazy world is rock and roll.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Daniel Van Sant about the Harkin Institute, and musician Megan Story told us a little bit about her latest work. In this segment of our show, Krista Davidson Flint will be telling us a little bit about accessible housing. So what can you tell me about your work in accessible housing?
So Accessible Housing Society here in Calgary, Alberta, is made up of predominantly sort of four service delivery areas. The first is our building Inclusio, which is a 45-bed multi-unit residential facility that was built 6 years ago, and it's the only one of its kind in Canada to achieve the Rick Hansen Gold Medal status for accessibility. We also have Chinook House, which is another one of our residential programs in the city here. We have our Bridge to Home program, which is unique, and we are the only program in Alberta who specifically targets the needs of folks with disabilities who are exiting homelessness. And we also have our RAD program, which is our Renovation and Accessible Design program, where we're able to support individuals and families and organizations sometimes to create more affordable and accessible spaces in community, mostly focusing on residential spaces.
So I'm curious, what are some of the key considerations? When you say accessibility, you've got to imagine there's many different definitions.
Indeed. You know, what we have found is that accessibility, you know, can be, you know, pretty strictly defined in terms of certainly the Rick Hansen Foundation. But what we have found to be critically important for the citizens that we support has been the provision of affordable and accessible housing. So we know that people with disabilities are four times as likely to experience homelessness in Canada than the rest of the population. And so when we begin to support folks to, you know, leave encampments or leave situations where they're, you know, profoundly underhoused, we also have to consider the affordability issue. Because we know that most people with disabilities live on fixed income, and so that's a really significant consideration for us.
So, how do you reach out to folks with disabilities to let them know that you might be able to provide them support in terms of housing?
We do that in a number of different ways. We do that through the Calgary Homeless Foundation and their process of the housing tables, whereby, you know, we would receive referrals based on a person's accessibility needs. We also have lots of outreach through Alberta Health Services and Continuing Care in Alberta. Our Inclusio building is actually
what's considered a lodge type, so we're under Schedule B within the province of Alberta, and so it's long-term supportive living, so we work closely with Alberta Health Services for referrals to that end. And also we have our own sort of outreach through our socials as well as our website and our many partners around the city, both in the disability sector as well as in the housing sector.
So, are there any challenges in creating accessible housing?
Oh, so many, unfortunately. I think one of the most profound issues that we have encountered and that we continue to work hard to draw attention to is the fact that Canadians with disabilities are at an alarming rate choosing medically assisted death, the MAID protocol within our country, because they cannot access affordable and accessible housing. So for us, our work needs to also focus on encouraging and inspiring community and government to make the provision of those affordable and accessible residential options more readily available to vulnerable citizens.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the society, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Oh, absolutely. We have a gentleman that has lived with us at Inclusio, and our residential program that existed before we were able to secure this really amazing building. And so he's a young gentleman that was living with MS, with multiple sclerosis, and because he was able to move into our Inclusio building, which has, that everything in rooms are controlled through an app on people's phone, which can be controlled through a voice modulator. It has every possible, it's considered every possible manifestation of accessibility you can think of. So when he moved in, he was able to actually complete his PhD in math. And one of the reasons he noted that he was able to do that was because he received the supporting care through our Inclusio building, through accessible housing, but also because his built environment didn't take as many resources and time and energy from him. It was all sort of built into that design, and so then he was able to focus on his PhD. So for us, that's a really great example of what accessibility can do for individuals and also for community as a whole.
So if you could send any message to the community about the importance of supported housing and accessible housing for persons with disabilities, what would you say?
Well, I think that there's a number of misconceptions about accessibility that sort of exist in the public domain. One is that accessibility is ugly, and so that modifications to a space that facilitate people living a more fulfilling life, are not attractive in a sort of an aesthetic sense. That's not true. We've come a long way in terms of what accessibility looks like in a physical space. I think the second one would be this notion that accessibility is expensive. We know that that's not true. We have lots and lots of data that talks about the requirements of people to access a space, people that have significant physical disabilities. Those points of intervention are really less expensive than we ever considered before. And I guess thirdly would be that this idea that we know for sure that building accessibility into building design from the design stage is so much easier than going back and retrofitting spaces. So when we think about builders and developers and, our partners in the sector who are creating spaces, we know that considering issues of accessibility from the design stage is cheaper, and it makes those accessibility components so much more usable for folks.
Like, thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Certainly.
Thanks. My friends, how did it get to this point that individuals with disabilities would find themselves in a position where suicide looks like a preferable option to facing the costs of accessible housing? It is a travesty that these people can't afford their basic needs. Now, the world right now is suffering a great deal. I, like anyone else, have felt this. that for individuals with disabilities who, through no fault of their own, find themselves in a difficult housing situation, the option of choosing medically assisted suicide is not the right end to this. To my mind, it cannot be allowed to go on. Yes, there are financial constraints on us all, but work together, find a solution. In a lot of cases, accessibility doesn't have to be the end-all, be-all of financial burdens. If in a workplace we can accommodate for usually an affordable, reasonable cost, why can we not do it in housing? Why can we not look from the ground up and say, how can we make this facility accessible? How can we plan for the future that someday someone with a disability is going to want to live here? And honestly, that's a lot easier than trying to renovate and retrofit. If you take accessibility into consideration in the first place, you're taking people into consideration in the first place. It's not a legal obligation. It's not even an ethical one. It is basically human respect. It is saying, I acknowledge your right not only to live here, not only to prosper here, but to live and to thrive. And honestly, it would seem self-evident that beats the alternative. That individuals are being forced to take their own lives because of overwhelming costs. That's heart-wrenching. It is tragic, and it needs to stop. There has to be a better alternative. I get it. Landlords are in business to make money, just like the rest of us. But are we so backward a society that we would say, we're going to protect a few dollars over the idea of a human life? Someone who has the potential to change the world, as we all do. Someone with hopes, dreams, values, all their own. And more than that, someone who is loved. Everyone has someone in their life who cares about them. Whether it's obvious or not, whether it shows readily or not, we all matter to someone, and no one should be forced to make that all-condemning decision to take their own life in the face of financial burdens, because, unfortunately, it really is a final answer. You can't just backpedal when the economy's better, when the world's circumstances are better. It is an end. It is something that must be avoided at all costs. The world is in a bad place today, but maybe tomorrow with the new sunrise, there'll be some hope. And that is the hallmark of disability life, too. Living to inch towards a better world. It's not always a matter of finding an immediate cure, but it can be a matter of taking steps in that direction. And eventually, you take enough of those steps, you might actually find what you're looking for. And on a very basic level, persons with disabilities are looking for what everyone's looking for. Hope, dignity, respect, consideration. And I am very glad that Krista and her organization are taking the time and the care to make sure that accessible housing is at least a possibility for individuals with disabilities. Hearing the words, there's no hope, can be devastating to anyone. Hearing that you're fighting the battles all alone has stopped so much progress in the world. For someone with a disability, to hear the words, I'm with you, I support you, they come to realize it's not just their fight alone. They're not the only ones climbing this mountain. They're not the only ones trying to make the world a better place. And I've maintained all along, the world can be changed, but not by a single act of tokenism or of just trying to sweep the problems away. No, the world has changed through community, listening to one another's needs and trying to fill them as best we can, listening to each other's ideas and trying to show respect. Building one another up, rather than hoarding for ourselves. You may have the money pile, but you don't have anyone to share it with if you're going to live only to profit. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.